If people were more empathic, the world would be a better place, don't you think? If we learned how to be more aware of, more sensitive to the suffering and pain of others, we'd be kinder and gentler. We'd treat others with more compassion. Maybe. Or maybe not. Yale psychology professor Paul Bloom recently startled a lot of people by coming out with an argument against empathy. In fact, that's the title of his new book, Against Empathy, The Case for Rational Compassion. Steve Paulson sat down with him to find out more.
Paul, this is a really counterintuitive argument you are making. It's hard to believe that anyone other than a psychopath would consider empathy to be a bad thing. Are you really advising people not to feel empathy?
I'm actually not advising that. I think empathy has its place. I think empathy is a great source of pleasure. Empathy is at the root of the pleasure we get from movies and TV shows and novels. I think it could be part of intimate relationships. But I think empathy is a poor moral guide. So I am advising people that when it comes to making moral decisions or political decisions, they should not use their empathy.
Why is it a poor moral guide?
Well, empathy has different meanings, and sometimes people use the term empathy just in a broad sense to mean being a good person and being moral and doing the right thing, and I'm not against that. But there's a more focused sense of empathy that a lot of psychologists and philosophers use, and it's the sense I use the term, which is putting yourself in another person's shoes, feeling what they feel, and in particular, feeling their suffering. And this might seem like a great way to proceed, a great way to make moral decisions, but the problem is that empathy suffers from various design flaws. So for one thing, it's very biased. We naturally feel empathy for people who are from our group, people who look like us, people who are cute. And it's very hard to feel empathy for people who are from another group, who are our enemies, who are strangers. And because of that, decisions guided by empathy tend to be highly biased, often racist. A second problem is empathy is like a spotlight. It zooms you in on one person. And if there's just one person to help, it could actually do some good behavior. But in the real world, we're faced with decisions involving many, many people. And empathy is profoundly innumerate. Because it zooms you in on one over many, it often leads to just the wrong moral choices. One way I put it is, it's because of empathy, we often care more about a little girl stuck in a well than we do about crises that could affect thousands or millions of people.
All right. So we read about that one story, or there's some big media story about one person in trouble or some tragedy affecting one person. We think, oh, if we could only help that person, whereas the nameless masses are actually, I mean, there are many more of those people, but it's not the individual stories that tug at our heartstrings.
That's right. So empathy is very malleable. And there's case upon case where our concern about one person leads us to act in ways that lead to, at best, it leads us to ignore the suffering of many, many others. In some cases, it leads us to cause the suffering of many, many others. One theme I keep going on about in my book is that empathy for a suffering person is often used to spur violence. It's something Adam Smith noted 300 years ago, which is that if you feel empathy for somebody, what follows from this is often a sort of rage at the person who caused that person's suffering and a desire for revenge. We see that for just about every war that we get into. The war is at least motivated, at least in part, by stories of suffering victims. We see that in a lot of anti-immigrant rhetoric, which takes the form of telling moving stories about people who have been assaulted, people who have been raped, people who have lost their jobs. And the outcome of these moving stories, the outcome of all this empathy, is often hatred against minority groups.
Hmm. So you're saying there's almost a continuum emotionally between empathy and anger?
There is. And in fact, there's laboratory evidence for it. People who are highly empathic are also highly punitive. In our own laboratory, we find that people who are highly empathic are more likely to want to approve of violent reprisals when people suffer. And other laboratories find that people who are highly empathic are more prone to punish those who cause someone else's suffering.
That's fascinating, because I guess I would just assume at a kind of gut level that those people with high levels of empathy would basically be really good people. I see what you're saying about, you know, maybe this wouldn't necessarily lead them to, I don't know, give money to the right causes. But fundamentally, they would be the kind of people we'd want to be around because they're going to help us out.
You would think that, but it's interesting. There's a lot of weaknesses to being high empathy. So one is it leads you to irrational choices. Another one, these laboratory studies find that it often leads to aggression and violence. But a third problem being high empathy is if you really feel the suffering of other people, it's often very difficult to help them. And, you know, a doctor or a nurse or first responder or therapist who has very high empathy would find it difficult to do his or her job. You know, if I'm a therapist and my patient is in anguish and I feel anguish, I just feel their pain, I'm not going to be a therapist for much longer.
You're going to be exhausted. It's just going to totally...
I'm going to be exhausted.
It's going to wear you out.
Nowadays, we call it burnout, which is a term developed in the 1970s. But Buddhist theologians talked about this a long time ago when they talked about the limits of what they call sentimental compassion, which was their word for empathy. And they said, this is a bad way to live. If you feel other people suffering, then helping these people will become a chore, will become miserable, and you won't be able to do it for longer. What they did then is make a distinction between empathy, as we call it now, and compassion. And they say that the right way to do it, the right way to be a good person, is to love other people, feel, want to make their lives better, but not feel their pain, to help people joyously.
So the difference between compassion and empathy is, with empathy, we're basically putting ourselves in the other person's shoes. We're trying to feel their pain. Compassion is a more general feeling of love, but less targeted at specific people?
It is. I think the crucial difference is that, you know, if you're in pain and I feel empathy, then I'm going to share some of your pain. And helping you out, approaching you, spending time with you is going to be difficult. On the flip side, if you're in pain and I just feel compassion for you, I could want to make your pain go away, but I could do it with a smile on my face. I could do it without suffering. And because of that, people who are high in compassion but low in empathy can help, can make a career, a lifetime out of helping and enjoy it, while people who are high in empathy will suffer through it.
Now, isn't there actually brain research showing that compassion and empathy engage in different parts of our brains?
There is. There's a wonderful research program by the neuroscientist Tanya Singer in collaboration with the biologist and Buddhist monk Matthew Ricard. And as part of their studies, they train people to either engage in what they call compassion meditation, or loving kindness meditation, really, and empathy meditation, empathy training. And they find, first, that these have different neural signatures. There's some brain overlap, as there always is, but they really do light up different parts of the brain. And second, and I think more important, they have different effects. People who go through this empathy training are exhausted, they find it unpleasant, and are less likely to help. While people who go through compassion training enjoy it and are more likely to help, it's more pro-social.
So compassion training, or this whole idea of compassion, it's more energizing?
It seems to be, or at least it's less painful. You know, there's some lovely work by David DeSteno and his colleagues on mindfulness meditation. You hear all of this stuff on the health benefits of meditation, but they actually find some really nice evidence that meditation makes you kinder in all sorts of contexts. And nobody knows exactly why, but their theory of it is that it makes you kinder because it shuts down empathic responses. And so all of a sudden, dealing with people who are suffering is no longer so aversive.
That seems so counterintuitive, that being kinder shuts down empathic responses.
Since I wrote my book, and as I was thinking about it, I've heard a lot from people who are EMTs or doctors, and they tell me the same thing. They tell me that they're at their best when they can help people, but they don't feel their suffering. And sometimes if they're too prone to empathy, they're just not as good at what they do. So first, they find it difficult and unpleasant, but second, they're not as effective at it. I mean, if I go to my therapist and I'm really anxious, what do I want from her? Well, I want her to understand me. I want her to care about me, but I don't want her to freak out herself. Then I got two problems. She'd never do her job properly. While I'm anxious, I want her to be calm. While I'm depressed, I want her to be steady. And this is true for intimate relations and helping relations. We don't necessarily want people to echo us or mirror us. We want them to respond in a way that improves our lives.
So play this out for me at a practical level. I mean, what changes if we think about doing good by deliberate reasoning rather than responding emotionally, particularly empathically?
So it involves a shift, and I think in part a cultural shift, in how we think about being a good person and doing good. A shift away from listening to our hearts and doing what feels right to actually in some clear and rational way looking at the consequences of our actions. And I'm not at all the first person to go here. There's a movement called effective altruism that says, look, too many people give to charities just based on whatever buzz they get, what feels right, what feels good. And it turns out a lot of this giving doesn't help at all. And in fact, there's a lot of cases where a lot of this giving paradoxically makes the world worse. So the effective altruists say, why don't you do the research or look at other people who've done the research and figure out what's the best use of your time, what's the best use of your money to making the world a better place. And in some way, I think if you really care about other people, you should put aside the occasionally satisfying buzz of empathy and instead focus more on the results and the consequences of what you do.
Has this research changed you personally in any way? I mean, do you do anything differently now because of what you've learned?
Yeah, a couple of things. To some extent, I wrote the book as an attempt at self-therapy because I'm highly empathic, or I see myself as highly empathic. And to the extent I'm empathic, that's led to sort of me not being at my best, not being at my best as a citizen, as a parent. And so I'm trying to be more rational in my charitable giving, trying to go to sites, websites like GiveWell, and determine what charitable donations make the most difference. I'm trying to engage in regular meditation because I think the evidence is pretty strong that sort of suppressing some of your irrational thoughts will help you be a better person. And so I'm trying to change my life in various ways.
You mentioned parenting as well. How has this changed the way you deal with your kids?
Well, fortunately, my kids are now old enough that they aren't so difficult to deal with. But my worst moments as a parent, it wasn't when I was indifferent. It's when I felt my kids' feelings too much. My son, for instance, could be incredibly anxious because he left his homework for the last minute. And he's a teenager. He's very upset. And my worst moments were I would get upset and I'd start to freak out with him. And my best moments were when I say, you know, okay, dude, calm down. Take a deep breath. We can work this out. Let's figure out a plan and everything. And I think the same thing holds for other relationships. When people are panicked, you don't want to panic with them. When people are depressed, you don't want to be depressed with them. So it sounds somewhat strange. You should love people. You should understand them. But this sort of bathing in their feelings makes you a worse person, not a better one.
Paul Bloom is a psychology professor at Yale University. His new book is called Against Empathy: The Case for Rational Compassion. Steve Paulson talked with him.